All right. There are many communities that are based now on the idea that in the silence, a group of people in a corporation, shutting up, sitting down, just getting very silent before they discuss a problem. They get very silent. They just breathe together, and they just relax into the moment. And what happens, those of you that do energy work, you know exactly what happens. As you get out of your egos and just relax into the moment, the energy begins to blend because the egos are not bumping against each other. So there's breathing, and the moment is very clear. Those of you that do work on clients, if you just spend just a minute, let's just be quiet, and let's just, you know, you can make up any story. Let's just get very quiet in the moment. I don't care. You could all be very creative. But all, what you're doing is slipping out of ego mind and emotion thought and into the moment. And then what happens is that the blending of all the energy happens. Out of that, absolutely exciting, dynamic ideas that are almost identical will start to pop out. And you will have people presenting ideas that are all the same. They will just come out of them because it is the appropriate right action at the moment. And as you begin to understand that in couples, it's no different. As children and parents, it's no different. With your elder parents and yourself, it's all the same. The very same pulsating energy of empowered light and life pulsates through every one of you. The thing that keeps it unclear is all of these things that we've been discussing. And when you just sweetly move to that level, what you do is you will, if you're quiet enough, you will pull them. Let me say this. Let us say you have a rambunctious 15-year-old, and they've decided they're going to go out and do drugs tonight, and they don't care, and tough on you. Well, where is the meeting ground? Where is the meeting ground? Well, the only thing that one can do is to realize if you can get very quiet, if you can really learn, and this is why it's called work. When you work at dropping out of fear thoughts, demand thoughts, I'm going to, you know, all of that pressure thoughts, and just get in the moment. What happens is the other person, without even really knowing, begins to be pulled down into the deeper parts of their own being. They get, if you want to put it this way, get pulled to the light. They get pulled there, not because you're grabbing them and taking them by the feet and dragging them, but because the best way to say it is that the strongest energy is love, and love energy always pulls others to it. It is the most electromagnetic thing there is. And when you are able to do that, the child may go on and do whatever it does, but in that time, or your lovers, or whatever it is, but what you have done is you get to that energy, they begin to feel that deeper thing. Some of you are in marriages or relationships with people that are very stressful. And one of the basic stresses, as I see it playing out in the room today, is that you are very different kinds of beings. You're very different people. You have different interests in life. You have different focuses, different desires of how to spend the money, different ideas on sexuality and on child rearing. And do you see the differences? They're endless. All right, now, I don't know if you've noticed, but talking rarely does it. You know, allowing each other, you know, therapists say, well, if you just talk it out, well, that's not true. There has to be, in order for any therapy to really work, there has to be a coming together of energy on the deepest level. And you say, well, my lover would never dream of going to a therapist. And I say, don't worry about that. Begin, and your children the same thing, begin, please, by practicing what we have just discussed. The many moments of your life that you practice this ongoing in your home without you having to say anything to the other partner, you are going to begin to find changes. Now, one of two things will happen, and I will warn you. One is they will become more mellow, more alive, more filled with compassion, or two, they will leave. I have to warn you. They will leave. Meaning that if you really stay in the depths of your being more and more and more, when you want your life to reflect that, and they are not ready for that pull, they simply don't want it. Another way of saying it, the drama is more interesting to them, or being the way they are is more interesting to them than any kind of union with you, they will leave. So it's a risk, and it is a risk. It is a risk.
I'd like to say that I feel like I'm increasingly able to experience the increments of this. What gets in my way revolves around my mind worrying about the future of welfare, emotional and physical welfare of my nuclear family.
Yes.
And I'm sure there are other men who experience that. I think you already addressed that.
But let's do it stronger. Yes. All right, Alan. Thank you. First, and I know this is hard for parents to hear, your children have their destiny. Your children have their destiny. I know that it doesn't mean, can you hear me? That your children have their own destiny. All right? And to a large extent, when they are seven, pretty much the destiny is in action. Things have begun. And it is very difficult for a loving parent to look at a situation in which they think things could be better and yet be unable to change it. Do you understand? Now, you have one of two choices. Here we go, Alan. You can either believe in the integrity of life and believe that whatever those children need to experience, whatever they have chosen, to honor the integrity of their choice, to help them as much as you can around the situation, but to have a part of you that absolutely honors that if they are in that situation, it is absolutely essential for them. Do you understand that? And that is a soul moment. It is the soul, it comes from the soul of being that says, their lives really are independent of myself and their mother and this and that and that. That they are doing what they are doing. And that's how you can, at age 15, the child is 15, is going to go and do outrageous things that you totally don't approve of. You can still find somewhere in you that says, out of your being, I have to honor what they are doing. I do not applaud it. I do not support it. And I certainly don't fund it. It's a deep opening inside, Alan, and it's a very difficult one for any loving parent to make. Because the idea is that you can help, that you can change it, that you can modify it, that you can, you know, get in there. But when you have done all you can do, ladies and gentlemen, I say this to everyone in this room and anyone hearing this tape, when you have done all that you can do, you have to, on the deepest level, release them to their destiny from your deepest heart. Because you cannot know. You know, the perfect life is not a life that is full of happiness. You know this. You all know this. The greatest moments of your growth often have been coupled with the most hellacious experiences. And you know it. And yet, because of the wanting to protect the children, you want to have them have the perfect environments, I understand all that, but it isn't like that. It's trusting life. I mean, again, we're back. Trusting your own life, the pattern of your own life. How do you trust your own patterns? You can only trust, you see, confusion in the human condition comes when you don't know if you've done the right thing. People come to me, I have to know if I've done the right thing. And whatever I say, what if there is no right thing? Well, there has to be a right thing. God has a preference. Now you have a really interesting problem, ladies and gentlemen. God has a preference, and it's your job to figure out what that is. And God isn't going to tell you, but you've got to figure it out. You have to figure it out. No. No. You learn one thing, and this I'm speaking to. When you learn in the space between everything, In the silence of the empowered present moment, there comes intuitions. There come intuitions, meaning you know something intuitively that your conscious mind could not know. You intuit something directly. You experience it. Those are the things you act on, and you stake your life on it. You live a life according to, quote, God, God's desire, or the good of the children, the highest good of the children, whatever you want to talk about it. Where do you get your direction? You get it in those intuitive flashes, and you don't get it with your mind. You get it by sitting quietly in the moment without thought. And then you find there rises up in you an action that you end up taking. Does everybody know what I mean? Do you?
What happened?
Wait a minute. There's can.
You hit on a spot that's very subtle. If I had a child, I lost it. Was on jealousy. So,
yes.
And I thought I did everything I could possibly do.
You did. You did. You did. You did. You did. You did. There's nothing you could have done that would have made it any different. Something that major is absolutely out of your hands. And it is the egos, not only yours, lovely one, everyone's egos who would like to think that it was. It is not. It is not. And I want to say something about huge generations of children are dying on drugs.
Was it just killed in a voting answer related to?
I just want to talk about all of them. There are hundreds of thousands of them. This planet, humanity, in the Western sense. Now, I cannot talk about the entire globe because there are two parts to the globe here. And we have one part of the globe that's fighting for something quite different. I'm talking about Africa. I'm talking about the Middle East and so forth. I'm not talking about that part of the planet now, please. All right? I'm talking about what I would call the Western Anglo-Saxon world. All right? Now, that part of the planet is making some very deep spiritual choices. And one of them is they are really ready for expanded knowing of the God Self, to really be filled with enlightenment. Now, the children and the young 20s, all of those in those years who are doing all of that, some of them disastrously, I want you to understand it is not without purpose and it is not without tremendous value. As an approach to higher states of awareness, they are teaching a major lesson. The drugs aren't going to do it. But the young ones don't know that. They are really on the cutting edge or the periphery of consciousness. They know what they don't want, which is the darkness that they see in their parents' lives and the world as a whole, the war and the loss and the poverty and the fright and all that. They know they don't want that. They don't know yet how to get what they want, which is happiness. You know, children get scolded because they want to be happy. Well, what do you want? You see, people get so upset. Well, why do they take drugs? Because they want to be happy. And they are misaligned with how to get it. But my dear one, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands, and they're learning the same thing. Now, that learning is individual for them as a personal whole, but it is also essentially important as a planetary knowing. Between now and 2000, that kind of activity is going to increase. I'm sorry, but I don't want to fuss. It's going to increase. But you don't go into the despondent thing and say, my child died for nothing. Not true. Not only did the child, as a personal experience, learn something that will not be repeated, but as a whole motion of awareness, they're teaching the psyche of this planet what works and what doesn't work. All right, Vietnam was another one of these. Those who suffered the mental anguish of Vietnam changed the mental capacity of the Western world for war. Believe me, as a single event, it changed it. No longer were they going to go for the Hollywood rendition of war and how wonderful it was. In the same way, drugs are getting a very clear picture. And the psyche, it is a collective psyche, and they're getting it on a deep level. Nothing goes without use. It is extremely useful. It is as if the children go out and they say, all right, I'm going to explore. Because these aren't young souls, you know. They may be young in years on this physical plane at this time, but they're not young souls. And they're ready for something new. Now, what are they teaching? They're teaching there has to be another way. And it can't be forced, and it can't be false, and it can't be something as simple as taking whatever. It's a wonderful service they're doing, my friend. And whatever pain, to really understand that, because it's all one magnificent blooming. But of course you did everything. It wasn't even meant, my friend, look, if you were meant to intervene, intuition would have come through you so strongly without your bidding that you would have intervened. But it wasn't yours to do. It just isn't. Do you understand? It's like, well, you know.
It hurt because I didn't know a couple months that something was going to happen.
Yes, but how do you know what? And what night? And how to prevent? And what day? And what? Of course you knew. In fact, well, on one level, everyone always knows, including the one it happened to. Because, my friend, however much you know, the child really knew. The child really knew. And that is where the difference could have been made. But it wasn't appropriate. I know this sounds so awful, but it was appropriate and it had the integrity of the necessity to happen. You know, there are no accidents. There aren't any, as you do know. And the opening of knowing that. And besides, you know, you've made a big difference to others because of your knowing and how you have helped others with the same kind of dilemma. You see, it's an endless flowering of awareness. Having suffered what you suffered, then others suffer less. It's wonderful. And is it painful? Yes. Yes. Questions? Did we finish? Do what you can. Isn't this corny? Do what you can and leave the rest to God. Corny, but it's true. Pay attention. Don't run away. Do you know, do all of you know how to practice bare attention? Bare attention, meaning, do you know how to be in the moment with just your awareness alive and not your stories and your emotional and mental pictures? Do you know how to do that?
It's just very difficult. I can occasionally a little bit, you know, but then it doesn't stay.
No, it doesn't stay. No, it comes and goes in flashes. In fact, if you can begin, it's seconds just like this of it at the beginning. You see, people say to me, well, I can't do it, and they quit. That being aware of bare attention is a moment. That's why it's called a practice. It's called a practice. It's called work. It means choosing to get out of mind and out of speech and into the moment directly. And you all know how to do it. It's just that you want it to be easier. But as you begin to do it, moment after moment, it does get easier. It does get easier. It's that consistently staying on it. Staying on it. Yes?
I have a question related to that. You talk a lot about sitting. And what about, is bare attention possible, like in moving to music very spontaneously and just totally becoming one with the music, or playing music, or just becoming one with movement?
You bet. All of it.
Do you miss anything if you do it that way instead of by sitting?
Isn't it a little... All right, let me tell you why we recommend bare sitting. Because you can miss... All right, when you begin to sit, let us say you sit inside half an hour a day, that's it, right? It's half an hour a day, you're going to sit down and not move. I don't care if it's in a chair or on the floor, I don't care, you know, just so long as you sit and you don't move. And you say, all right, for 30 minutes, I will not move. And so have a timer so that you're not always looking and just sit. And just in that half hour, what happens is you begin to see, please follow this, the words are awful. Begin to see how empty your thoughts are, how empty your anger is, how empty your jealousy is, how empty your loneliness is, how empty your desires are. How you begin to see how empty they are. They are not what they appear to be. And do you understand? And when you just sit there, you begin to see that they're empty. They come and they go and they change and they're this and they're that, and sometimes they're here, sometimes they're there. All of a sudden, they become empty. They do not grab you. And you begin to realize there is a relaxation that takes place. Now, I absolutely think any kind of movement and music and all of that is magnificent. Is magnificent. At the same time, I would say, unfortunately, that just sitting without moving teaches something that being in movement can't. I don't say one is deeper than other, but there is a different way, because you know when you're in movement, there is something that happens. This is why the dervishes do it, you know. I mean, you begin to spin so that you are thoughtless, so that you are filled with just the space and so on. It's wonderful. But there is another kind of observation that is essential when you just sit, which is you begin to find out how dull you are. Not you, any more than any other, understand?
Right. No.
How dull you are, how boring you are, how endlessly repetitive, and you think, well, no wonder the world doesn't love and adore me, I'm boring, you see? And you get it, you lose the, how can I put it, the ego identification. You see, if I was to ask you, answer this question in your mind, okay, how would you identify yourself? I am a fill in the blank. Give me some examples.
Worrywart.
What?
Writer.
Child. Woman. Afraid.
Teacher.
Charles is a no thing. Good. That's the best. Anyone? Usually you will say, I am a... You identify usually... Well, if you're whatever you're worried about, if you're worried about you, I am a parent. I am a, your job always comes forward. You know, I am a writer, or I am a teacher, or I am a potter, or I am a dancer, or I am a computer, whatever. But when you begin to realize, as you sit, we're back to why, you begin to see through the infinite number of people that you think you are and go around acting as. I can't talk about it very well, except I wish we could just sit for a year, everyone. Just sit for 1 year with people supplying the food, and we just sit. And somebody else cleaning the bathrooms, and we just sit. And for a year, and amazing things could happen. Because over and over again, you would begin to see the false I, the small, limited I. I am this, I am that, I believe in this, I believe in that. Well, do you? Well, today you do, but tomorrow you might not. I mean, all of these fighting to be these I's, you know, in other words, in never-ending, ongoing, changing from this identity to that, to that, to that, to that, to that. You watch this as you sit, and finally you get it. And that's when the aha goes on. The aha! I'm not any of those. Ha! Amazing! I'm really not any of those. It comes out of you with a great aha. And then you laugh, remember? You laugh and laugh and laugh. Because it's very funny. You have thought you were all these things? I am this, I am that, I am this, I must be this, I am struggling to become that, I. All of a sudden, these great eyes, which are very small and ever-changing, you see through, you see, this is why they keep saying there is an illusion. And you see through the illusion. How? Well, one of the main ways, I know it's painful and can be, discomforting, is to simply shut up and sit. For a half hour a day, not focusing on this and focusing on that. That's another kind of meditation. And of course it's helpful. Anything that focuses, someone says, what's the difference between focusing on the light, the image of the light, and doing what I suggest? The difference is that in the end, the light helps you focus. But you see, that's not the point of this. The point of this is to simply experience. Without pushing away, without pulling toward, just sitting in what is. Because in the end, if you'll just sit around in what is, exactly as it is, you begin to really see what is behind the illusion. And you know this is a camouflage. You've been told this endlessly. There is something pulsatingly other behind all of this. And it is easiest seen through by that calm, seated half hour. And one of the basic components is you're going to bore yourself to tears. until you get so bored and you still refuse to move and you just keep sitting day after day, you give up, you quit seeking, you quit looking, you just begin to sit there, and then one day you allow yourself to experience the plain experiencer. You just bore yourself into that, and that's exactly what I mean. You bore yourself into it. People who want ever-increasing increments of this and this and this eventually have to get to the place where they sit down with themselves as is. That's why it's called bare attention. It should be called bored attention. But stay with it long. What else? What are your alternatives? What are your alternatives? Yes? What would you like to do?
Make use of Zen compassion. After he died, I had such strong pain, I couldn't sit. It's almost I wasn't allowed to. I had to let that go too. Now I have a heart problem, which doesn't really allow me to sit as I wish Zen.
Let me tell you.
It
feels
like it's a great teacher.
Mm-hmm. Then lay down.
Right. Even now.
Look, sitting, you know, let's change the word. Let's lay down. You see, dear one, it doesn't matter. Sitting with your spine up doesn't matter. In fact, have you read Mr. Kaplow's book, The Three Pillars of Zen? Wherein I suggest it to you, you will love it, because one of the greatest enlightenment stories is of a woman who is dying and cannot sit. It's wonderful. Sitting for someone who has done it is almost irrelevant. So lay down. But whatever you do, as many moments of the day as you move around your life, if you could practice that same practice, then it's finished.
I find myself accepting the lesson.
Yes.
As it comes close to myself, I'm saying to myself, well, I think I got the lesson, so why can't you be normally?
Yes.
Just to let it happen.
Do you ask yourself the question, to who is it happening? Could I just give you that as a guidance for the next few months? Try it. As the question arises, as the fear arises, as the disgruntlement arises, knowing that you're an infinite being, which you do know, and experiencing severe limitation is exasperating. Now, I would ask you, next month, the question is, who is exasperated? Don't answer, just who wants to live? Who's breathing? Who's thinking? Who wants it different? Who's accepting it? Who? Will you stay with that? Who? Through it all and see where we get.
I'm just wondering, if I find myself recently, I've changed careers and I'm living a much more creative life now, and I'm being pulled into thinking a lot about creative visions, and when I stay simply with my creating, it's very positive, but what I'm wondering is if the idea is really to be in the moment, if some of these dreams I have, if they're true, I guess they happen naturally. In other words, sometimes I feel I have to bring thought energy to them, to create them.
Give me an example.
Well, I'm real interested right now in performing and singing, and I'm doing a lot of songwriting. And when what happens is I do get very tense when I start thinking of what I want to offer. Though it seems like a positive thing to me. I feel expectation and pressure as opposed to just going off to my piano lesson. That feels good. When I think about all the things I want to sing about and communicate, there's definitely fear in there. So so there's a conflict in terms of, maybe do I need to give my vision energy to create it, or what is?
I think they're both true. Look, you are not simplistic. You see, you will not be able to hold to just being in the moment with bare attention. Because mind rises, emotions arise, body needs to move, action needs to take place. So it's all of a piece. But running through all of that, my friend, running through all of that, whether you are pulling your mind together to focus on a process, or dropping into the moment, there is a sameness in both of those experiences that I want you to pay attention to. There is a sameness in your tense moment as there is in your relaxed moment. There is a sameness in the creative thinking process as there is in the seated in the morning process. When you begin to sit, that becomes the base for realizing, this simple feeling is present all the day, all the night. And as you begin to become aware of that, then what happens is all of the changes, the mind comes in, the emotions, everything flows, but it flows in an immense context of the sameness, which is the self, which is the God self, which is the light, which is the power, which is what you're seeking, which is the bliss of it. And it's there all the time. So what I ask all of you, while you have your lunch today, would you please try to feel the sameness in every moment? There is a sameness when you're walking, or whether you're talking, or whether you're urinating, or whether you're eating, or whether you're, I don't care, whatever you're doing. There is a sameness that moves from moment to moment that you're not looking for. I want you, please, to look for the sameness. You are used to looking for the differences, which is how you evaluate yourself. I'm better than, you know, you can always tell what's worrying you. Let us say that you're worried about your weight. You will walk into a party, you will know everyone who is overweight. You go into a party and you want to start a hot love affair. You will, within 5 minutes, know everyone in that room who is a candidate. You will go into the room, you're worried about smoking. You will know all the smokers. Do you understand? Whatever is on your mind is what you will see, because you're looking for that. Now, what I want you to do is look for the similarity in every moment, no matter what you were doing. The similarity when you're silent, the similarity when you're talking, when you're eating, when you're whatever you're doing. Will you try? Because if you start looking for the similarity, it is going to come forward instead of looking for the separation, which is what you're looking for now. So, lovely one, they're both part of it. And it's not an either or. Just like breathing in, if you do that too often, you know what happens. And breathing out, you know what happens. It's the excitement of something else other than breathing in, breathing out, something other than that, as opposed to this. There's something wonderfully, they're both. Because the mental tension is exciting in its own way. That feeling of tension, the question is, who's feeling this tension? There's a similarity to you. All of you wander around and you say, I. You never doubt. You don't wake up in the morning and say, am I here? Am I alive? No. Why am I here? Well, I wish I weren't here. But you never say, am I here? Well, what is that? What is that I? You're driving down, I got in a car accident. That same I that woke up in the morning is now being experienced in a car accident. As the I that is miserable, as the I that is angry, it is the similarity I'm asking you to pay attention for. And you can get it by 1 o'clock. It's up to you. This is an ongoing continuum eternally. It's called an eternal verity because it's eternally present. There's no question about it. It's that. It is the nature. It is what is. It is unchangeable. You can't get rid of it and you can't get it. It is it. Yes.
When I'm with you and or when I'm reading and I get really just terribly sympathetic with somebody and, you know, things just well up and they're here, Is that like a secondary experience, or is this getting down to my quote's true nature?
Ah, good question. Both. Both, because just as in the question of the tension over the creative mode, can you feel intense response to either something in your environment or something within yourself, which is what we're talking about? That intense response, if you just stay with experiencing it. Now, what do I mean? I mean, how does it feel in your body? Does it tighten up here? Does it tighten up here? All right, good. If you feel that, stay with the experience. Watch the breath. You know, how is your breath going? Remember, you know, you're seated in a body. Just stay with it. So here comes this powerful feeling, and you just stay with it. You just feel it. You don't think about it. You don't talk about it. You don't analyze it. You just allow it to be present. You can do this with compassion. You can also do it with terror. Those of you who waken and are afraid, certain times you awake and you're afraid. You know, people are, all of you. If you're being honest, you can awaken and you're fearful. Because fear, I mean, why not? You're not stupid. You look around and you realize this is a fearful place to live. You know, living is dangerous to your health, you see? And you know, you get it off very quickly. And That fear, you cannot run away, you can't hide it, you can't talk yourself out of it any more than you can that upwelling of response of the heart and of the being for something. All of that is the pointer. And what is it pointing at? It's not pointing at anybody outside. It is pointing to the necessity in that moment for you to not move an inch from that experience. Who is feeling this terror? Feel it fully in your body. Where do you feel it? Don't think about it. Don't worry about feeling it. Just allow yourself to feel it fully, fully. And that means, where is it in the body? What does it feel like? What is the breathing like? What's happening to the stomach? What's happening to the tension in the body? And as you begin to ride the moment with that intensity, true nature of the moment begins to become obvious to you. And what you begin to realize is what we asked you to do at lunch is there is something other than that feeling present that was there in the morning, that is there at noon, that is there any time. There is a continuous similarity. Yes, the fear is there. But there is something very familiar other than the fear. Yes, the response is there, but there is something else very familiar right there. And that begins to point you back to that essential, never-changing nature. It's much closer because at least you are allowing yourself to feel it. You see, in the end, it doesn't matter if you're feeling fear or if you're feeling compassion or if you're feeling creative excitement or if you're feeling whatever it is you're feeling. That's a secondary thing. And the thing that is similar is there is some other feeling that is ever present in the presence of all of that. And that's why all of these strong emotions come right back. People say to me, I don't like to have fear in my life. And my answer is, then you'll probably never get enlightened. Because fear is one of the primary motivations. If you are honest, that is what is going on. You're struggling very hard to have your life not be frightening. That's enough for now. So I have no idea what time it is. What time is it, my friend?
About 10 to 12.
We'll have a 10-minute meditation before we go. Those of you that need to lay down, some of you are quite tired. If you need to lay down, please do so. And the rest of it, let us have a meditation. Just spend a moment or two, please, listening. Just listening. Run simply. Be aware of the breath entering the body and exiting the body. Just entering and exiting. All right then, my friends. The subject that I want you, please, begin to grapple with has to do with dying. instead of becoming afraid of death, we'll find that tremendous amounts of energy can be added to your life by bringing about a different relationship to it. I'm speaking about your own death and death of those that you would prefer not to die, at least not until you've done it first. So what the subject is, and I will give you a few basic guidelines, but the subject is death and how to understand it. If as you begin to work this through, you begin to be aware that there are various levels to this question, as best as you can, note the shift of level. This is not a simplistic question, and your answers will not be simplistic, and they will be ever deepening. So you can have a variety, each one of you, a variety of answers. So the rules are simply this. You speak one at a time. Your comment is not available for other people's comment. Example, if X says something, B does not argue, does not say, but I don't agree, doesn't say, I think that's silly. You just simply give from your center, into the center of your circle, your intuitive responses to the question, what about death, your death, the death of dear ones, and this is important, and how to live with an ongoing acknowledgement of death, day by day. Recording angel, please, does not have to take down everything that falls from anybody's lips. Rather, just makes notes of the key points that are covered. Are there any questions? Please speak one at a time. And as you sit, develop two skills, please. One, the skill to really listen. Now, please look at this body up here, please. When you listen, you will find that you can listen with your ear, which is one way, or you can listen with your whole body. Would you please practice listening with your whole body? That means all of your energy field. Just listen with your whole body and see if you can't see and feel and experience a difference. The second, be aware of what's going on in sick ways to awaken is to simply be watchful of what rises and falls in your mind. You will know yourself a lot better at the end of this exercise if you will be watchful. Any questions?
How much time do we have for this?
I'm not going to tell you, Charles. But thanks for asking. Yes?
Can we just keep going around?
No. Spontaneous combustion. Yes. No rules. In fact, if you find that you are waiting for rules, notice that. That's a good notice. Oh, I have to wait till the person... And then, I can't speak because so-and-so hasn't spoken yet, and so on. Find out what your role in a group is. It's all very interesting. The person who's talking is finished. Let's end it. That seems to follow through in that particular presentation. Any of you? All right. Anger, sadness. Thank you.
I think that multiple expression of a lack of fear of death. Seen very much as an acceptance and moving on.
May we talk about this a minute? Excuse me, but that is where the problem lies. The reason, because when we talk about not being afraid of death, it's because there is a romantic, it's going to be a new world. How do you know? It's going to be a great experience. How do you know? It's going to be wonderful. I'm going to love it. How do you know? You see, the reason that we do this is only as an idea of being ready to let go and move on is a wonderful concept. But in reality, when you begin to deal moment by moment, you are not only about death, you are afraid of death of endless things. Not only your physical death, the death of your health, the death of your mental faculties, the death of your ability to run your own finances, the death, you see, it's just one death. But when we say the final death, you know why? It feels so good. You say, oh, good, I'm getting out of here. Oh, that's great. That's great. I don't have to worry about the mortgage payment. I don't have to worry about being incontinent. I don't have to worry. Do you understand? It's a relax. Oh, good. The curriculum's over. I don't know if I passed or failed, but I'm done. You see? Good. I hope I get, C+, B-, depending. But now, I am not saying that you don't have a genuine excitement about dying. I'm not saying that. But the one of the reasons that death seems all right is because of it's such an ending of what? Of all of the endless fears. You see, the biggest fear of all ends up being one of the least fears of all.
I think that's what we are trying to say back here.
Good, Charles, yes.
That we kind of had and shared that in different ways, but the similarity through metaphysics is that fear was no longer there because we have a better understanding that the soul doesn't die, it just goes through a transformation process.
Right, absolutely.
I think that's what we are trying to say.
And the reason that you... and it gives you relaxation. Please hear this. The reason, please, any of you that need to stand up, please go right ahead and take your seats. The reason that idea that the soul goes on gives you comfort, and please hear this, is because a part of you recognizes it as truth. Now, if you had been told that when you died, you became the king of heaven, would you believe that? No, you're not going to be the king of heaven. nobody's the king of heaven. Do you understand? But when the teachings, which the universal teachings of power say, on releasing of the body, you do have this, and you go on to this, and you experience this, a part of you nods your head, not because you're gullible, but because the vast part of being goes, I get it. Yes, I agree with you. That is what's going to happen. And this is why a study of metaphysics helps tremendously, because then that fear is taken care of. So, but let me thank you. Can we go on? Because I want to come back. So, who was here?
Yes. Well, I kind of saw a pattern of flow kind of towards death as an embrace, and then maybe fears would come up from some people, and there'd be more of a surrender. Like, we kind of balanced off each other.
Uh-huh.
So there was a sense of the fear and the uncertainty, and it was also a lot of help in terms of the surrender in each day.
Good. Did you, was there also, all of you, a bit of a sense of excitement? Mm-hmm. I think, basically, a little bit of interest in it? Are you at all interested in the idea of dying? Does it have any interest? You know, like you'd be interested in visiting other countries. Are you interested in the idea of dying?
Yes.
Yes, good. I think that is one of the universal excitements. And if you can get very attached to and be willing to really get excited about dying, that doesn't mean you're going to go out and do it tomorrow. It just means that there's an excitement, meaning you have the same anticipation, the same overwhelming interest in inevitable. And it's a, I recommend the word to you. Is there any other? Was it?
Well, yes. That came up in this group, and people who have been at people's bedside, at a deathbed, feeling a euphoria, which was often hard to explain, or a sense of a birth. And at the same time, people talked about how, in thinking of their own death or something, of the process of moving toward death would be the hard part. The death would probably be a breeze after that. It's just going through
a nice
all those
word.
Stages.
I like the choice of word. A breeze. Nice, relaxed flow. Yes, yeah. Wonderful. Anything else? Anyone else that wasn't mentioned that you would like to say? All right. I want to excite you about the idea of beginning to be watchful about the fears that come up about the 100,000 deaths. We have talked a little bit about the big one is not the one that is frightening to you. What is frightening is all of the small deaths unto that point. All right? And it is an exciting, magnificent new approach in the United States of America that you are being willing to acknowledge that you are going to die. The United States of America has had tremendous resistance to admitting to this astonishing fact. And they do all that they can to keep those who are about to do this obscene thing hidden from view. And they begin to put, the best way to go into isolation is to get ready to die. And everybody says, well, that's enough of that, and the way you go. You see? Now, that is not what's happening. And I see it's absolutely part of the whole explosion of consciousness that the idea, it was, I believe it came from this, the one someplace, creative dying. Did we hear that? That term, some idea about creative dying, meaning the whole, that's the excitement. You get creative about things that excite you. You don't get creative about things that bore you. The creative excitement, my friends, you are going to have hundreds of deaths, thousands of deaths. People are going to die out of your life. That's a death. Your ideas are going to die. You're all of so many things. Death is the other side of the living experience. And the way to really become emboldened so that when the so-called final deaths, the last stages, begin to show up, you will be so good at this that it will be absolutely no difference from how you live your life. Let me say this again. One of the difficulties about death in the Western world is it comes on you all of a sudden. One day you're well, and then next day you're ill, and then here come all the fears, unless you've lived to be much, much older, and then you begin to anticipate it in greater and greater frequency intervals. But the fact remains, if you're paying attention, death is constantly there, and the same, my friends, listen, the same fear that is present at the end is already present now. You don't have to wait to die to begin to feel the fear that you're going to fear when you're there. It's the same fear. You've already got it, only you haven't named it death. You're the fear of losing your grandchildren, or you're losing your whatever it might be, losing your money or your health or your legs or your what? Do you understand that fear? If you're paying attention to your feelings, goes on all the time, and it is getting very familiar. If I could put it this way, snuggling down with those feelings now, becoming very intimately friendly with them. That means acknowledging your fear. Let's say you're driving along and you almost hit a child. If you're paying attention, you should, your whole body is in terror. Your whole body, isn't it? The whole body. And you, if you stay with it, I mean, please put on the brakes first, but if you stay with that terror and the rush and the feeling and the response and the whole thing, it is a real, that is a death experience. The moment of dying is not going to be any worse than that moment. The fear, the terror, the confusion is not going to be any worse than that. You know, it isn't that someday this awful thing is going to come smack you in the face. When you see, the joke is, when you get there, when you finally finish all this living and you get around to this dying business, if they could say anything, most of them would say, you know, we've done this before. We've done this millions of times in our life, besides which we've done it thousands of times before this anyway. You see, it's a very familiar feeling, this dying. Now, the excitement here, please, when you begin to, let us say, your loved one is somewhere away, and the telephone rings at 4 a.m. Is that a good one? Pay attention. That terror, that fear, as you get up to walk to the telephone, as you become aware of the thoughts, the feelings in your body, how your breath changes, all of the thoughts that go through your mind. you are now facing your own death, just as clearly and as strongly as you will at the end. Those are death experiences. And it doesn't get any worse than that. And then when the news comes, whatever it might be, and your response, and the agony in the body, and the whole thing, that is real. The end, whatever this mysterious, terrible ending, is not going to be anywhere near as difficult as many of those moments that you experience all the time. I'm trying to tell you, it's not something to live in fear of. It's something to begin to acknowledge that is going on constantly. When you begin to understand that, no matter how young you are, when you begin to understand that, then you begin to live with an interface in a very different way. Example, people project, please don't let me sit on this water, Mr. Moore. Well, we could. It would be a different experience. Yeah. Thank you, my friend. A small wet death, yes. The idea that we wanted to bring today is that the living fully, absolutely, and we're coming to the question about the earth changes, which I'd like to talk about in a little while, is every moment is a very clear mirror of an ongoing process. And just as you don't wander around in the dark and then all of a sudden God explodes in your face, neither do you wander around and suddenly death and fear explodes in your face. These are all ongoing continuums, that's a lovely word, the ongoing continuum of consciousness that has many of the things already embedded in it. Another way of saying it, there are no surprises. You have these fears that if a certain event is going to happen in the future, and it's going to contain something that you have not experienced yet. Do you understand? You're worried about certain events that are going to happen to you. Let us say you're worried about the loss of your legs. Now, you can sit here and become totally terrified about the prospect of losing the use of your legs. Terrified. And pictures and so on. If in events you do end up having that happen, you will find it very familiar. It will be like a lot of the other events that you have gone through and survived. It will have the same feeling that many of the losses and the limitations that you have endured over all of these years, it will feel very much the same. It will not be some huge surprise. Another way of saying it, you have already experienced as much terror and fear, but you haven't acknowledged it as terror and fear. And so you have not had the tremendous gift of knowing how much you can survive with your humor, with your light, with your power, and with your wonder and your excitement of living. Because you fail to acknowledge the endless numbers of times that you have gone through death and loss and terror and fear and limitation, and arisen victorious. Because you don't acknowledge the endless times, then you find, the reason we bring this forward is it makes you feel fearful because you're afraid that there's something down the road that you're not going to be able to handle. You have handled endless things just as difficult as the next segment of your life has to handle. But you don't know that necessarily. If you haven't been giving yourself an ongoing report card, an ongoing acknowledgement, an ongoing statement of well done. It is that living with death and loss and change and limitation, because I think those are the things, death, loss, change, limitation, those are the things that bring up the fears in the human psyche. And when you begin, people say, oh, I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about my loss. Well, my friends, it's just like that moment when you think you might have hit the child, and you have already experienced it. It is already firmly received in your cells. Your mind has already firmly seen the images, has felt the response. It's already recorded. What is the last thing that hasn't been done? The only thing is that you haven't taken any time to allow yourself to fully experience it. You get up and go on to the next thing. I'm asking you, we're back to this morning. You need to spend time, how is the simplest way to say this? You need to... Because the last stage of living anything is truly experiencing the experience. There are so many stopgaps, places where you stop. All right. There's so many places where you stop and move on to the next before you allow yourself to... about this. Oh, that's a beautiful sunset. Now, as you were saying, endless. Just, I know these things sound so silly, but really, when you begin to realize that every moment lived fully, meaning with the awareness that we talked about, plus allowing yourself the honor of truly experiencing what you have gone to a lot of trouble to create. Thank you for laughing, Anne. May I say this again? You're all very tolerant of this. Allowing yourself the right to experience what you have gone to a lot of trouble to create. You do not just create happy events, blissful events. You create the entire spectrum of human events. And when you are looking at the television and you're seeing someone, usually from another country, doing something against your country that you very much don't like, you've gone to a lot of trouble as a world globe to create all of these pockets of difficulty. And make no mistake, you are not separate from anything created on this planet. Nothing. That's a lot of trouble you've gone to. No matter where it is, you know, where over in that funny country with that funny name in that funny place. Haven't you found there are a lot of funny countries with funny names that you never dreamt of are all coming out? And all of a sudden you're finding not only did you help create it, but you're jumping right in and, you know, stirring things up. Things are going to be like that all over this globe. Countries embroiling each other. And on one level you could say it's a negative aspect, but I want to tell you, it is really bringing the world into a very tight energy field. You are going to have to deal as a globe. And it's happening. You're going to have to be a global consciousness. It's happening. Whatever your reasons and however your political aspirations, this has nothing to do with should you get into one country or not. Simply saying, it is becoming a global consciousness and it's going to happen. Years, you're going to see your country as well as many other countries. It's going to begin to happen. And please, from the God point of view, good. From the unity point of view, good. Are you going to have to suffer? Maybe. Are there repercussions from being a global world rather than an isolated country? Yes. You're going to have to give up something? Probably. So I don't care about your political, whatever you say. I'm just saying from a world consciousness, things are getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's good. Because the smaller they get, the more you can really understand the need to get along. It's working. Is it mysterious? Yes. But it's working. That's all I would say. I don't want to... That is not a political statement. Please, I have your politics the way you want. Did you want to say something? Does anybody have a political statement they really want to make? Because I'm happy to hear it. Yeah. All right, now. Again. Creating Omar Gaddafi. Creating Iraq. I mean, creating Somalia, creating all that. And now, please, allow yourself the privilege of fully experiencing what you're creating. And the more of you, hear this, the more of you who allow yourselves to really experience those creations is going to give rise to no longer having the necessity to keep creating the same things over and over. Say it one more time. The more of you human beings who are willing to experience your creations, the creations that you've made jointly, as you begin to experience them fully, you will be giving the possibility of not having to keep on creating the same kinds of experience. That's a very deep statement. It may bore some of you. Yes, Charles?
Excuse me. Why would we want to do that to begin with if we're part of the whole create something like Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein? Why? I don't understand.
But I hear you. Charles, look. On its simplest line.
Do we also, on the same continuum, do we also create Somalia and Africa, the starving and all that stuff too? If you extend that and count on it a little bit? And what's the value of that?
Yes. I can come in at a very high level, Charles. And I will come in at the highest level that I can. All right? Because seen on a low level, none of this makes sense. All right? But seen from a high level, which is where I want to come in, it goes like this. Within each one of you is greed. You see, let's talk about Somalia, right? Within you is greed, wanting your own, wanting to have your own possessions, wanting to have power over, wanting to have some kind of power over other people, gives rise to the gun lords and so forth. If you could honestly tell me that any one of you in this room is free of all of those attributes that you see magnified over there, then I will have to reconsider this. But what is happening? You are a human condition. And what you see through this is the extent of greed, isolation, and power over, and manipulation taken way out to the extreme. You can't miss it, Charles. You look at Somalia and you can't miss it. You look at those children and you see the adults choosing to let them die. And you can't miss. But what can't you miss? If you miss, you miss if you say the Somalians are X. But if you can look at it and say, that is in me to an extent. Ah, I acknowledge that. I can sit here and acknowledge their feelings inside of me, that there are times when that is exactly how I felt. I don't mean, Charles, that you would allow a child to starve and die in front of your face. I am not talking about that. I am talking about all of the human weaknesses which bring about such events. And you, this is why they say you are not exempt. Because you all have them. Now, to the extent to which each of you stop being Americans, I don't mean to become Somalis, that's not my point, but to become a universalist and to acknowledge the part of you that you see outpictured out there. When you see Saddam Hussein, if you're paying attention to what you feel inside, you probably feel all the attributes that you've given him. You're angry. Furious, you want to get over there and drop a bomb on him and get rid of him, or you, all of that comes up. That's what we're asking. Acknowledge. Feel it. Don't try and change it. Don't say, oh, it's his fault. Just say, ah, this is the feeling. This is what it feels like to be a limited human. This is what it feels like to be a human. And when you begin to feel that, Charles, when you allow yourself to say, oh, this is in me too, I want to promise you, by that simple act, you're helping. What does not help is to say, bad, bad boy. Bad boy, Sodom. That doesn't help. Because, excuse me, but there is a degree of that within each. When you begin to see the mirror clearly and understand, what happens is, where is that, my friend? The heart of compassion begins to open up. When you can sit in your living room and feel your own heart contract when you look at what's being done and you find yourself getting, you call it righteous indignation. Well, so does Saddam Hussein. He calls it the same thing. Only it's over a totally different point of view. The experience is the same, the human experience. Do you think he thinks he's wrong?
Of course.
He knows he's right with his whole being. And he has a lineage that backs him up. He has a huge mental lineage.
Right too. But let me ask you, is that when you...
Wait. Don't just run over Hitler quite so simply. Because, Charles, he's the finest example. He's the finest example. And watch what's happening now. That same... You see, every human being on this planet had a chance to when they saw the rise and fall of Hitler.
Well, I could say, I think he thought he was right, but he only did what the people permitted him to get away with.
And why was that, Charles? Because they all wanted the same thing. They wanted to feel superior. They wanted to feel, yes, safe and superior and better than. My friends, look.
But see, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you don't try to take somebody else's life to get there, in my view.
I hear you, Charles.
Can I ask just one question about that? Is that if what you said so far, you try to correct that situation and make it right as a global unity?
That's not what I said, but go ahead.
If trying to... Well, you said the world is getting better. It's getting more unified.
I said it's getting smaller.
Well, we're getting more... You know what?
You're getting closer together, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. You're rubbing against each other much more,
right.
Yes.
Which I think is good. I think that, you know, United Nations and being more used effectively, etc., etc. But okay, I'm just saying is that if one wanted to really focus on that and expedite that and continue it, which has just power of what you had said of sensing this, like you had just described, over the power of prayer, are they both equally effective?
What would you pray, Charles?
For world peace and love and sharing and giving.
Okay.
For this world to become a better place in which we can all live.
Mm-hmm. And moment to moment, if you can pray like that, moment to moment, if in the moment of seeing something that absolutely angers you, that makes you feel outraged, when you can, at the same moment that you feel that outrage, allow yourself to acknowledge that it is in you as well. That's all we are asking. We are not asking Saddam Hussein to blow up the planet. We are asking you to see that it is a mirror. And what is the mirror for? It is to let you see what you have projected so that you can simply begin to experience it in yourself. When you see these things that are so painful, instead of getting angry at, please stay with the simplicity of self-examination. Watch your own response. As you begin to feel and experience all of these things directly, you will be doing your share of bringing light to the planet. And that is as deep a form of prayer as I can possibly imagine, is standing here and claiming, yes, and me too. You see, it doesn't help to say, well, them, but not me. Because that denies. If you see it, if you, for example, there are people, I always use her as an example because you know of her. Her name is Mother Teresa. Now, Mother Teresa's responses are different because of the years and years and years of prayer and claiming of her own limitations. If you've done any work on reading her own inner path and her inner struggle, it begins and ends with saying, Father, I know my limitations. I know my weaknesses. I know, in her words, my sins. I know them. And I know it's very unpopular at this stage to begin to acknowledge these things. But what has happened through the years of her acknowledging, not worrying about the other people, but her own response, being alert to her own thoughts, her own emotions, her own responses in all ways, she has become so honest with herself that she knows herself to be a part of the human condition. She does not think herself better than. Believe me, if you could get in her mind, you would know she does not think she's better than. The world looks at her and says, what an extraordinary woman. And she says, humbug. She says, humbug. It is that ultimate humility of accepting herself as a total human being with the same capacity for God realization and the same capacity for disaster. All we're asking, ladies and gentlemen, and then we'll move on, is to you acknowledge, allow yourself to fully experience all of the experiences that this incredible planet is creating. You are creating these things together. Now, when the time comes that this is no longer necessary, you simply won't reincarnate back here. If the planet is still doing that, you'll do something else. Haven't you ever wondered where all those almost illumined ones went? I mean, haven't you? You know, you've been working and working and working and working. You're coming more and more alive, more and more awake, more and more clear, more and more and more. Well, then where are all the other ones that are almost more and more and more? Where have they gone? So then we have, on the one hand, the truly enlightened, and then we have the ones trying. But then where are all those middle ones? Haven't you ever wondered? Like, where are you going to go in your next incarnation? You will have achieved a tremendous amount of clarity, light, honesty, integrity, and power. What will determine where you go? What will determine that is the state of this planet. If this planet is still, you understand? If this planet is still embroiled to this extent that you feel that the energy fields are such that this isn't going to be the most growthful place for you, you'll pick another reality. You know, there are plenty of them out there. So what's the job? To just be as aware as you can. And that means aware of your own stuff, to be unglamorous about it. And to use all of this incredible drama so that you can say, ah. And then, as you acknowledge, with good humor, I hope, do you know how harmless Hitler would have been if he had a good sense of humor? If he could have seen himself, he would have laughed. He would have had no need. Because he would have laughed at himself. Oh, look at you, you arrogant fellow. Oh, you're against the Jews? Well, I thought you were a Jew. Oh, well, don't pay attention to that. Talking to himself. Oh, you're anti-Jew? Well, aren't you part Jew, Hitler? Well, no, we're not going to think about that. We're not going to worry about... I mean, you know, if he had been honest, he never would have arisen. Because he would have been able to laugh and say, you're a funny little fellow. Go hang some wallpaper. You see, he could have been... He could have... Do you understand? He could have had humor if he would have begun with the assumption that all those things that he resented so much were what he resented in himself. And all of the things that he hated so much and wanted so far away were the things that terrified him in himself. And that starts and ends with a good laugh. And when you start laughing at yourselves, you are just this far from enlightenment. I mean that. When you start laughing at your own stupidity, at your own myopic perception, at your own determination to be right, you are going to, it's just around the corner. Without that, you'll be superior and stuffy. If he'd had a sense of humor, it would have made all the difference in the world. The smallest amount of introspection.
Is that also applicable to like Gaddafi?
Everyone. To everyone, including everyone in this room. You start lightening up on yourselves and laughing at yourself more, the light increases with laughter. You know, just a laugh again and again. Oh, that was cute, Mary Margaret. Oh, very well done. Oh, man. You know, just some of that, please. But whenever you find yourself, what is the key? When you find yourself really angry, pay attention. Not just, oh, that's boring. Oh, how could anybody, that's not it. It's that, when your energy field rises up and you have to, you know, be careful. Because almost always you're dealing with a projection of your own self. And when you can sit back and say, well, who cares? That's fine. So.
Excellent discussion.
Thank you, Charles. He comes a long way to do these things. I'm very glad to see you, Charles. So, die all day with consciousness. Get aware and alive and excited by the whole process of watching this. It's amazing. Life becomes one exciting event after another. The excitement starts in you. Yes.
How do you deal with, like, feeling paralyzed, overwhelmed, and numb? I mean, it sounds wonderful what you say, and I wish they were like that more. But that happens to me at times.
Well, I think when you're paralyzed and numb, and what was the other wonderful description? Overwhelmed, paralyzed, and numb. Now that's a definition of life, right? All right. Just a brief commentary, because I think you've heard some of this before. Look, there are only two things that your cells can do. Cells can only do two things. They can expand or they can contract. And when they are expanding, you feel all those wonderful words we heard this morning, flow, motion, excitement, energy, bliss, warmth, creative excitement, all that. All right. That's one thing. Now, the other thing they can do is to contract. And that's when you feel all of the things. It's gray. It's tight. It's confined. It's stuck. There's no motion. There's no way out. There's no doors. All of that feeling. All right. That means the cells are contracting. Now, I have said, and I mean this, it's so simple that people rarely do it, but when you feel yourself in the contracted state, the very first thing I would say to you, as simple as it sounds, is to begin to breathe. That means to begin to breathe in, if you have to exaggerate it, you feel so much different after a... It's the beginning of what you're saying to the cells, because it's a cellular phenomena. You're saying, you see, the mind isn't stuck. The mind is ever active. It isn't the emotions that are stuck. They're ever in motion. It is the physical body. It is the sense of body tone. It is the sense of cellular holding that you're experiencing. Because, you know, the emotion has usually gone way off. It's finished. It's gone. But you're stuck with the residue in the body. You know, somebody says something to you. You are a purple rhinoceros. And you say, I am not. Yes, you are. And they're out of your life. You can spend 2 weeks being a purple rhinoceros response mechanism, and they're totally gone. They've forgotten. They don't even know you. They're finished. It's gone. Done. But you can sit there for 2 weeks in this response. Now, one way of knowing how close you are to allowing yourself to be light is how quickly you drop those. Now stop and be fair to yourselves. Every one of you in this room that's been in this kind of work any length of time, don't you feel a difference from when you began? Do you remember when you began? Do you remember when you began? Give yourself acknowledgement. So the first thing is to realize it is not a mental or emotional reality. Those events have passed. It's a cellular constriction, meaning it's just stuck in the body. And when you work on the body, this is why such things as, where's the lady that says dance? Who did wanted to dance? All right, little wonderful things. Breathing, dancing, moving, walking, yelling, screaming. That's why all of those outrageous things happen, to help. Just to let it go and to begin to acknowledge the shaking of the body. You know, the Indians, North Americans, every night of their lives around the fires, and the women used to do it as well, just going around pounding the earth. And what were they doing? They're grounding all of the difficulties, the loss of the game, the difficulties, it's not raining, all that. They pounded it rhythmically into the ground every night with the understanding that before you go to the sleep state, you want that out of your system, so they did it. Now, you know, and it's strange because the new Sweat Lodge fire is the disco. And there are people that go to discos and just dance their negativity right into the ground. People who do, this is why people jog. This is why people play tennis. This is why they do all these things. They get it out of their bodies. Now, if you do it as a discipline, and because you have to do it, I have to walk because I have to be young and gorgeous and so on, that is a certain feeling tone, and that's not exactly exciting. But if you can translate all of that somehow into something that excites you, if you throw clay, put it into the clay, whatever it is you do, you know, the idea is get it out. The idea is this is not carved in granite. The emotional, mental event has long passed. All that's present is some kind of a stuck residue in the body. And when you deal with it in that way, you can relieve it. And that's what ends up putting doctors out of business eventually. With all due respect, Alan, you can become other things, my friend. You can become other things, lovely one. Do you understand?
Yeah.
It's getting it out. Dis-ease often is directly related to the inability to be allowed to get things out of your body. And that's one thing that you were not trained to do as children, right? Don't do that. These days, little ones, I know the grandparents are having fits, but the grandchildren are doing better. They are allowed to be more outrageous. Their parents are a lot looser. They allow them to scream and yell and so forth and so forth. And the grandparents are frowning because, of course, you know how well adjusted they are, you see, and how happy they are with life and so forth. But there's the loosening. There's the loosening. Everybody's getting a little looser, meaning they are allowed to scream and yell, and then that's enough of that, dear. Give me a hug and go to bed. Instead of taking all of that into bed and having nightmares that frighten you, and then you wet the bed and then you get punished and then it goes around and around and around. It's happening, my friends. The wonderful thing about the Western world is it is getting enlightened. It is lightening up. It's lightening up.
Is this why rock and roll came in?
Yes, look at it. Isn't it wonderful? Have you ever seen, if you ever want, a hysterical thing. Look at Mr. Elvis Presley. He did more to loosen up from people from the neck down than most goddesses and gods that have been walking around on this planet for centuries. He had, do you understand? It's just the let it go. And he made millions at it, which is the best thing. It's that wonderful sense of being able to let things go. And to acknowledge, my friends, please, these are cellular residues. They are not the real thing. The minute, look, the thing is, you believe, I don't know how interesting this is to you. If it isn't, well, I don't know what to say. Well, then it's finished. All right. All right. Look. Let's look at this funny thing called reality. All right. Let's take a guess.